Good morning. It is Sunday, December 8th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. 4 years after Woodstock, a circle of friends living in Eureka Springs decided to stage an Ozark Heritage Family Folk Festival on a remote and rugged piece of Carroll County wilderness. But instead of families, an estimated thousands upon thousands of people showed up. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to visit the site on the 40th anniversary of the event.
Dustin, Todd Griffith, his spouse April, and Desmo, the terrier, hike up a forested dirt road this frigid Sunday morning towards what was the amphitheater for the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair. Along the way, Dustin stops to show us traces of abandoned campsites covering the 110-acre parcel inhabited by hippies 40 years ago.
You'd be wandering through the woods and come across like these little campfire rings, and this one's kind of grown up, but you can still see, like, you know, right here, these old bottles, and this was where someone camped during the festival, and there's just spots like this all over the place up here.
Dustin is an ace mechanic. April, a research librarian at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. Dustin's people have lived on this land for several generations. He spent his childhood exploring every bit of it.
Well, basically, this creek that we're just about to walk across, it kind of splits. Basically, the property is two hillsides, and they come together and kind of form a little bit of a natural sort of bowl.
Along the way, we see several half-buried concrete pads covered in rusted iron pipe. Water spigots, says April Griffith.
There's a really great photo in the Springdale News of a young hippie girl washing her feet right next to these spigots. It was really neat when I started doing the research and I saw it and I said, oh, hey, I know exactly where that is.
Dustin, April, and their family are the only ones now who know where this place is. Dustin's grandparents, who occupied the parcel at the time, leased the property to create a temporary Ozarks Folk Festival village. And artifacts from that fair are scattered everywhere.
It's mostly, you know, concert detritus. There's some really old vintage bottles. I like old things, so to me that's been the most interesting thing is some really beautiful, like, artisan glass bottles. Someone drinking a big bottle of wine. I think we found a keychain. We found that moccasin.
When I was little, I found a six-pack of Dr. Pepper in the creek. And in the steel cans, was still had the plastic thing on it. And I was like, oh my God, it's a whole six pack of Dr. Pepper. And I picked it up and half the cans were gone. It was just the top half of them. They'd been sitting in the creek, like trying to stay cold. And the whole bottom of them were just, all six of them were gone on the bottom half.
With the tabs, remember those? A well drilled especially for the festival is just up the hill, which gravity fed three individual water spigot systems, including a kitchen. Above that, the amphitheater bowl, Dustin Griffith.
I'm not real sure where the stage was completely laid out, but it was definitely in here. And you can see, like, there's lumber left over from, like, in some of the pictures you can see this big wooden kind of wall that they built, and there's all these nails, like, in some of these trees right in here. And what my dad told me is they cut down trees and laid them on the hillside. And that was the seating.
Nothing remains except a few old boards half dissolved into the dirt. But 40 years ago, those log benches were packed with fans, listening to a remarkable amalgam of musical acts. Earl Scruggs Review, John Lee Hooker, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Leo Kottke, Mason Prophet, the Lewis Family, John Hartford, Big Mama Thornton, Clifton Chenier and the Cajun Band, John Loudermilk, and of course the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, and more. Tickets to the event, $12. According to fair co-organizer Albert Skiles, the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair was unprecedented.
You had black gospel music. You had Earl Scruggs, the traditional bluegrass. You had James Cotton Blues Band that was just awesome. You know, lots of drums, lots of brass. So they were all within a certain circle of musical, I guess, genre.
Skiles, who's an amateur drummer, got to play on stage with John Lee Hooker as the house band.
Anyway, he showed up out of the blue in a helicopter because he decided he really wanted to play. But he never said anything to anybody. He just got his guitar and walked out there and started playing. And we were backstage wondering where he was. And all of a sudden, everybody started screaming. And he said, well, he's out there playing. I said, well, we better go get on the drums.
Albert Skiles had just graduated from architecture school in Texas and moved to the Ozarks. In 1972, looking to homestead, he landed in Eureka Springs, where he met Ed Jeffords, a West Coast journalist and rock and roll promoter who had also moved to Eureka. Jeffords, a Rector native, had formed the Ozark Mountain Folklore Association, used his connections in the rock and roll industry to book talent for the folk fair. His event was endorsed by Arkansas Parks and Tourism, Eureka Springs City Council and Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Arkansas State Legislature. A crew of six assisted Jeffords in organizing the Ozark Mountain Heritage Fair, which reportedly cost $25,000 to set up. Jeffords' intent was to create a family heritage event, blending national and regional Southern bluegrass, gospel, and folk musicians with 40 working Ozark craftsmen and farm fresh foods. Instead, along with a few country families who showed up, thousands of pot-smoking, long-haired hippies swamped the festival.
It was great. It was great. It was a great release because everybody looked just like you. And, you know, there was a counterculture going on at the time, the Vietnam War and so forth. It was great to be among your friends.
Albert Skiles was in charge of graphics and posters and assisted with festival site design. The ecology and natural foods movement were just taking off, he said. Fairgoers parked along Highway 23 North, just south of the Missouri-Arkansas border, and hiked through the front gate. But it was impossible to construct fencing around the perimeter, so Jeffords hired a security firm from Tulsa, Men on Horseback, to protect the place. But the cowboys couldn't contain the horde sneaking through the woods. They eventually split. Attendance numbered between 20,000 to as high as 150,000, a figure provided to regional media by the Arkansas State Police. And even more would have come, Skiles said, if the weather had cooperated. Torrential rains and lightning shut the festival down Saturday night, reopening Sunday. Fair organizers published a special newspaper program guide, now yellowed with age, advising patrons to bring necessary camping gear, but to leave behind their hassles, alcohol, weapons, prejudices, and politics.
Reminiscing here, reading about it, they had one of the first times I could see advertising organic vegetarian fare, not just hot dogs, you see. And this was, I think, an offshoot of the Earth Day was just in 1970, the first Earth Day. So you have Earth Day, you have the Vietnam War, you have Woodstock, you have all these influences, and then you had this great influx of artists and musicians and architects like myself that moved to Eureka in the early 70s. And this is what helped formulate this idea, and this event was a showcase for all that.
According to the Eureka Springs Times Echo newspaper, conservatives were not at all pleased with the event in their backyard, but local businesses were. Even the performers were blown away by all the good vibes, said John Lee Hooker and Leo Kottke, who since returned to Eureka to perform. Thousands of black and white photos taken by Albert Skiles and others attest to this mellow vibe. Albert Skiles eventually left Eureka Springs to establish a successful architectural firm in northwest Arkansas. Fair organizer Ed Jeffords also moved on, obtaining a law degree, eventually serving as assistant Texas Attorney General. He died in 2002. The fair was staged just once. It apparently went bankrupt, with so many hippies breaching the perimeter. Adjacent to the Griffith family homesteads, the parcel has stood empty. So will the family post any interpretation and provide public tours someday? April Griffith.
What stands out about this event and what it sort of connects to the Ozarks in the bigger sense is the Back to the Land movement. I think a lot of those people attended this concert, and I think that's probably part of the history of that. So I think maybe when more people are interested in this part of history as it becomes more and more historic and there's more interest, yeah, we'd be happy to give people tours.
Still, she wonders at why so little is known or written about the epic 1973 Ozark Mountain Folk Fair.
I think one of the interesting things about researching this event is that it's very apocryphal because there's not a whole lot of documentation. There were people who were there. There were people who were there who have died. There were people who were there who maybe their memories aren't the best because a lot of substances being being consumed at that time. So there's different versions to the story. So what I've been doing is as I hear different versions, I've just been keeping it all because, you know, and trying to collect as much as I can because, you know, like so much history, who knows what's really the truth. So I just want to keep all versions of it.
April Griffith has said about formally documenting the festival, and perhaps someday the museum will host a special exhibit, she says. Extensive footage of the fair taken by noted American music documentary filmmaker Les Blank, who was there, exists, likely buried in his archive. He too has passed away. As for Dustin and April Griffith, they're constructing another homestead on the family property where they intend to raise their family and tend to the festival's ghosts. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To read April Griffith's blog on the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair, you can visit the backstay at shilohmuseum.org. One book has been published, a pictorial collection published by photographer Jim Mathis. You can see that at jimmathis.zenfolio.com.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, how sports reflect the best and the worst in the character of a nation.
There's a bloodlust. Is it true of everyone in the game? Of course not. But it's true enough of a large enough strain within the game that reasonable people ought to be concerned about it.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Listen this Sunday at 11 a.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Earlier this week, before the winter weather hit the area, about 40 students from Elkins High School turned a local Walmart into their classroom. This is a story that first aired on Daily Ozarks at Large earlier this week.
Why are they charging $39, do you think?
Because they have a window.
Kelly Stewart works for Nook, a manufacturer of baby products. Yesterday, she spent almost 45 minutes with some of the high school students who happened to be studying business, marketing, and advertising at Elkins High School. During that time, she explained relationships between retailers, vendors, buyers, and manufacturers. She pointed out the intricacies of product placement on shelves.
As you're shopping, you're like, what does this mean? We all ask the same question. Well, it's a very good decision on the supplier and the Walmart buyer side to have shelf space set aside so people can touch and feel, play with it, figure out how it works before they buy it. That will help them make their decision because using these two shelves, which is 4x4x4x4, 16 linear feet just to display is a tough decision for any buyer to make because they're giving away holding power for the items that people are actually buying.
The afternoon session was facilitated by the Education Renewal Zone program in the College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas. Elizabeth Smith, the director of the program, says yesterday's Adopt a Classroom visit, like others the program has helped create, has its roots in the recently adopted Common Core standards for Arkansas school students.
The purpose of those standards is to promote college and career readiness for students. And so these students are taking a marketing and advertising class, and this opportunity connects them to how this class matters in the real world and hopefully connects them with the possibility of studying business, marketing, or advertising in college, and then what that leads to in the real world. And so it's all about connecting high school to the real world to really get students interested in the subject matter.
The Education Renewal Zone program is funded through a grant from the Arkansas Department of Education. Under the project, University of Arkansas faculty and staff adopt a K-12 classroom in one of 27 local school districts, most in districts with underserved student populations. She says the connections help public school teachers gain access to experiences for their students they couldn't otherwise provide, like learning how a 3D printer works.
Or a lab, or last year we had a psychology professor who brought his brain that he does research on, his human brain, out to a seventh grade science classroom. So these are resources that the university has that public schools don't have typically access to. And then also the K-12 teachers have a lot to teach our university faculty about best teaching methods and how to connect with students.
This particular Elkins High School class was adopted by Tara Dyer, the coordinator of the University of Arkansas Global Campus at Rogers. She says not only are there vast resources available through the university, but having the headquarters of the world's largest retailer close by provides opportunities as well.
It's a great partnership, too, between the university, the local school districts, Walmart, and the vendors in the community. So it's a great working relationship between all these different entities in the community, too.
Likely, not all 40 high school students in the session yesterday will end up in business or retail. But some of what they heard yesterday carries a universal, real-world lesson, such as this exchange between one of the Elkins teachers, Kelly Stewart from Nook, and a few of the students.
You have, like, deadlines and things like that, right?
Yes, deadlines.
What happens if you don't meet your deadlines?
You get fired.
They have deadlines in the business world, and when you have a deadline,
you
like...
You got fired from school?
I'm just saying.
That means you need to brought your last year senior semester.
I heard
class.
You earlier complaining about your math class. She had a deadline. Yeah. I know. I'm just saying.
And for those students paying close attention, there were as many lessons that could be valuable for a young consumer as there were lessons for potential retail professionals.
Sometimes what you have to watch out for with the premiums is think about it before you buy it. Like, why is it really a premium? Because some suppliers will charge a premium, but it's just for your perception, and people end up paying for it. But you have to ask, why are you really paying extra for it?
The Elkins students broke into three groups yesterday to hear about marketing strategies. One group went to soda and potato chip aisles at this Walmart. Tagging along with them to observe was Denise Thomas from the World Trade Center, where she is Director of External Relations and Africa Trade Desk. She says the students were able to use those potato chip and soda aisles as a kind of marketing laboratory.
Tina with Nook did a very good job of explaining the placement, the positioning, the pricing, specialty items. The students got to experience it, but they also got to see some of the buying habits of the customers and how they were specifically focused in that aisle on what they were going to get on the soda aisle, and then how the customer meandered a little bit more but down the potato chip aisle. So the patterns of behavior that the customers had, they got to see that and ask questions, and it was nice because it was a real life experience in shopping.
For those students actually contemplating a career in retail, there were words of encouragement from the professionals. Kelly Stewart from Nook says the field provides a chance to stay in Northwest Arkansas.
And get into, you know, business, make a good living, have job security. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of suppliers that you could work for. I worked for Smucker's, like jams and jelly, for 10 years before I switched to Nook. Well, I did Kraft for one, Smucker's for 10, and then I've been at Nook for 2.5 years. And I work out of my house. It's wonderful.
There was one more retail lesson offered yesterday, one created by coincidence. Kelly Stewart was originally scheduled to talk to her group at the peanut butter and jelly aisle based on her 10 years experience with Smucker's. But this was on a day before the possibility of ice and snow, and by noon, the PB&J all sold out. So on to the toaster aisle, where the shopping was slower.
And so she did a little bit of research before the class got here, went over to peanut butter and jelly, and realized the aisle was wiped out. There really wasn't much merchandise to look at today. So we went to toasters. There wasn't a run on toasters, so we were safe over there today.
But even on the toaster aisle, the day before people are expecting to lose power, an Adopt a Classroom session might end up actually helping a real customer.
What are y'all doing?
We're doing a little class.
Oh, okay.
The advertising and marketing class.
Very good.
Can we help you find anything?
A food chopper.
I
looked over there.
I was going to say, I pretty much...
We can help you with toasters.
I'm sorry.
This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is here for your community. And in this season of giving, we hope you can help out as well. KUAF's Giving Tree will benefit the Outback program from Fayetteville Public Schools during the holidays. The Outback program is looking for non-perishable food items and gently used donations of children's clothing, shoes, and coats. Simply bring your donation to KUAF at 9 South School in Fayetteville and place it under our tree. Thanks and happy holidays.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Most roads in the KUAF listening area are still in pretty bad shape. If you don't have to be driving this morning, probably a good idea not to. There are some cancellations we'd like to pass along. Again, if you were expecting to do anything today, it's a very good idea to call ahead. But we do know that all of the weekend performances, including today's for Junie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, a production from Trike Theater, are canceled. Also, this evening's concert at 5:30 on the University of Arkansas campus, the Hope for Ion, has been postponed. The makeup date for that concert, sponsored by the Fulbright Scholars at the University of Arkansas, has yet to be determined, but they do plan to have that concert sometime in the next week or so. If we get any more cancellations that are new during this hour, we'll pass them along to you. This has been a pretty good month for restaurants in Northwest Arkansas. Several Bentonville restaurants went to New York to become formerly part of the James Beard Foundation. And Greenhouse Grill won a national competition, and their black bean slider is going to be served in restaurants around the country. We also discovered that there are some interesting culinary events taking place in downtown Siloam Springs. The tasting at 28 Springs in downtown Siloam Springs in mid-November was based around butter. And if you saddled up to the sleek U-shaped bar at the restaurant for the 4-plus course meal, you had a few minutes of homework to do first.
2.5 minutes and you will have butter for your bread.
What do I have to do?
Shake.
Okay.
With enthusiasm.
Like that.
Yep, you got it.
All right.
Hey, Casey, do I have one?
Every patron was handed a small jar, and after the prescribed 2.5 minutes of shaking, the contents inside the jar had formed into a rich helping of butter to be spread on the bread made inside the 28 Springs kitchen. Casey Letellier, who manages the bar and helps create the tasting menus, explains the shaking sparked a bit of culinary science.
Damage the little fat globules in the milk and the cream, and they come together, and you make butter. It's simple, but this beautiful thing.
The tastings at 28 Springs pair beverage and appetizer, beverage and soup, beverage and entree, beverage and dessert. Casey Letellier works with the restaurant's head chef, Dorothy Hall, to dream up the matches. He admits the tasting menu, more often than not, has its origins with a drink, say bourbon, one of his favorites. But last month, the event was based around that cooking staple.
But the tasting we did tonight, we actually started more on her end, and we said, all right, let's show off butter. Let's show off all the amazing things you can do with butter. And then that actually makes my side super easy, as all the things you can pair with butter are super easy to pair drinks-wise. So I wanted to do kind of a range of different possibilities. A wine and a cider and a beer, and then finishing with a bourbon to just kind of show off all kinds of different directions you can go with pairings.
It is also kind of a fun thing.
Each course comes out with a bit of a backstory. The grits in the catfish and grits appetizer are from War Eagle Mill. The bourbon paired with the dessert is from a small independent bourbon maker in Colorado. For Dorothy Hall, the head chef, the tastings are her own kind of homework.
Yeah, it's constant learning, and that's how I view this job. I will never know everything I need to know for this job. I love researching. I love reading cookbooks and trying new things. These tastings in particular are really beneficial for me because I'm always doing something new that I've never done before. And so I do the research and then I cook it and I learn.
Both Dorothy and Casey cite Miles James, the executive chef and guiding culinary figure for the restaurant, as an important influence. He's also the chef behind the menu at James at the Mill in Springdale. They both compliment his attitude of exploration and his emphasis on locally sourced food. Dorothy Hall says with all those moving parts and all those possible ingredients, the open kitchen at 28 Springs can, during dinner, look like a bit of controlled chaos.
Our kitchen is divided up into two zones. We have the front line and then we have the back line. During dinner service, especially on busier nights of the week, we have somebody at each different station. We have an appetizer station that's broken up into cold apps. We have hot apps. We have grill. We love our grill. It's a wood-fired grill. We get that locally. It's a mixture of hickory and oak, so you get that authentic smoky, woodsy flavor.
28 Springs has an in-house full-time pastry chef, and desserts, sauces, and more are all made inside the kitchen's walls.
During dinner service, this is where we rush around trying to replenish. During the daytime, we have a full-time saucier. His name is Robin, and he is wonderful. He does all of our sauces. Our list of sauces is over 30 of them. We start with our chicken stock, which is roasted chicken frames, caramelized vegetables. It's cooked for 48 hours. It's a beautiful base, and it turns into all of these other sauces. He also does all of our soups, and he is the king of the fish fry on Fridays.
With all of those possibilities at their disposal, Dorothy and Casey say they doubt they'll ever have to repeat a tasting idea. She says they speak the same culinary language, and that allows for the development of an overall theme for a particular tasting. But the duo doesn't feel bound by convention. The tasting inspired by butter last month included dashes of smoked paprika, cornbread stuffing, Scottish shortbread, and a butterscotch dessert that won universal approval. Casey says the tasting menus are a result of hard, but not undesirable, work.
We always do what we call a tasting of the tasting. Before we serve these, we sit down and we talk through the dishes, we talk through the pairings, and lots of times we make adjustments. We sort of have something that we're imagining, and it doesn't quite pan out exactly the way we were looking for, and it might be just a little bit of different spicing in a sauce, but sometimes it means we switch wines entirely. We think, oh, this one's going to fit, but the acidity level doesn't work with that dish, and we just have to start over. It's a really fun working relationship, and we both are really excited about trying to show off as much of what's local as possible.
Those local collaborations might include partners who come to the tasting, like White River Creamery, and sometimes it means partnerships in the kitchen. 28 Springs and another Siloam Springs-based enterprise, Pure Joy Ice Cream, have worked out a deal that allows the restaurant access to the ice cream machine and the Pure Joy folks access to the 28 Springs kitchen. And then sometimes the inspiration for a tasting might come in one of the tiny brown bottles set up neatly on one side of the bar. Little bottles of bitters.
Bitters are this great old-fashioned way of tying together the flavors in a cocktail. When we're experimenting on new drinks, there's lots of times where we'll get what we feel like is about 80% of the way there. We're like, oh, this is coming along. This is good. And it's a dash of the right bitters that will tile the flavors together, and suddenly it sings. But there's just all kinds of different, like, subtle variations between them. And we use those to just kind of nudge the cocktail just that last little sort of 20% where it needs to be to finish.
And from that finished cocktail might spring next month's tasting appetizer or entree, according to Dorothy Hall, the head chef.
And so a lot of times it is more drinks focused, and so he'll talk about the drinks and the flavor profiles, and then we kind of come up with an overall theme of what kind of foods we might like to serve, and then it's just going back and forth. Well, what if we try this? What if we try this? Until it just feels right. And so we really enjoy doing the themes, but at the same time, we always try to use local ingredients when possible, but also choose foods that reflect our region themselves while still exploring other regions. So bacon always shows up. We try to do other things that feel like authentic Southern cooking, even if we're exploring other cultures.
28 Springs is located at 100 University in downtown Siloam Springs and online at 28springs.com.
Thanksgiving was last week, and for some, it marks the official start of the holiday season. For one group in particular, it is definitely the beginning of a very busy season. Officers with the Fayetteville Police Department are on high alert Thanksgiving through Super Bowl Sunday, patrolling for those that might be driving under the influence of too much alcohol. Family gatherings and holiday parties are a time that many partake in festive spirits, only to get in their vehicles when the party is over and make their way home. Corporal Curtis Sutley is one of about 120 patrol officers with the city of Fayetteville. He says the department does have more officers on traffic duty during this two-month busy season, and that they're on high alert for traffic violations.
As opposed to other areas of enforcement that other officers enjoy doing and try to focus on throughout the year, traffic enforcement becomes a higher priority for us during the holiday seasons.
An officer must have probable cause to pull someone over. They can't simply sit by a bar and pull a car over just because the driver walked out of an establishment that serves alcohol. During a typical week, Fayetteville sees about 20 driving while intoxicated arrests. But during a busy week, they can see up to 40. With 2,212 DWI arrests in 2012, compared to the almost 12,000 seen statewide, Fayetteville sees more DWI arrests than any city in the state. Fayetteville prosecuting attorney Casey Jones says it isn't just because it's a college town.
It's not just college students. You have people come from other parts of the state and certainly other parts of the region because this is a popular place. We have a big entertainment industry. You have Dixon Street, a lot of restaurants and the rest of it. So people come here and probably have a little too much to drink. And so we have, and on top of that, we do have a university, and that results, I think, in a higher number.
The cops aren't just patrolling campus or Dixon Street. Here's Corporal Sutley.
I patrol as many of the major thoroughfares as I can, but DWI is something that is not just a local problem. It's not a downtown problem. I've arrested DWIs on every street in this city, it seems like, but it's people traveling to, from, coming into, and going back out again.
Contrary to what some may believe, officers aren't just out there to get us. Driving while intoxicated is dangerous. Jones says that in 2010, the number of fatalities from automobile wrecks in the United States was the same as it was in the last year of the Eisenhower administration.
Now consider that. Our population was much less than it was in the last year of the Eisenhower administration. We drive a lot more miles per capita, and we have a lot more cars and a lot more roads that those cars travel on. Yet our deaths were the same as that. Why is that? Well, three things. One is cars are better made. The second thing is enforcement of seatbelt laws and the fact that we have seatbelts in vehicles, which they didn't have back then. But another thing is organizations like MAD forcing police departments and prosecutors to pay more attention to DWIs. And as a result of that, people are much more likely to get home because there's less drunk drivers out there.
It's also a change in culture. Watching a television show like Mad Men, which is set in the 1960s, you'll see the characters having cocktails in their offices at, say, 11 a.m. or 2 p.m. It's pretty much unheard of these days. Jones credits organizations like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, to changing behaviors that were previously joked about.
One of the biggest changes I've seen in Fayetteville is the advent of cab companies. And I think that's, who knows how many lives that has changed. Certainly has saved people thousands of dollars in fines and attorney's fees and the rest of it.
A quick Google search results in four cab companies with an address in Fayetteville. But say you choose to drive and you see those flashing blue lights behind the car. What can you expect?
You go through a series of questions with people. You identify yourself and explain why it is that you've stopped somebody. You start paying attention to everything around you, including where they're coming from, but how are they speaking? Are there any odors coming out of the vehicle, such as the odor of intoxicants or, in some cases, drugs? And you just go through a series of questions with them and make a determination then whether or not they need to come out of the car and go through a battery of field sobriety tests or if they're okay and send them down the road.
Those tests are the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, the walk and turn test, and the one-leg stand. Fail those, and you get a ride in the back of a police car straight to the police department inside the Washington County Jail. At that point, a breath test is given to test blood alcohol level. Anything over a percentage of 0.08 is legally intoxicated, 0.02 for those under the legal drinking age of 21. Sometimes it is heard that someone refused to blow, which is illegal and a charge in of itself. It's called violation of implied consent. By getting a driver's license, drivers are committing to taking that test.
But a lot of people think that by not taking the test, somehow they're going to get out of that DWI. I think Fayetteville probably has a higher rate of refusals, people refusing to take the test, than any other city in the state. And I think that's because they come from their whatever town they're from, and their uncle, who's a lawyer, who says, oh, when you go up there, if you get a DWI, whatever you do, don't take the test. That might have been true 15 years ago, but it's not true now. There's been case law that says refusal to take the test is a sign that you're probably DWI.
In a DWI trial, that refusal can actually be used as evidence against someone, and the chances of being convicted are pretty good. In the last 5 years, Jones has seen driving while intoxicated charges increase in regards to those that are a result of drugs rather than alcohol.
The DWIs have changed from just being the guy that had a six-pack out at the lake and is driving home to perhaps somebody who borrowed his brother's ADHD medicine, had a couple of beers, smoked half a joint, and maybe took somebody else's Xanax. And in combination, one of those things by themselves might not be enough to affect their driving, but a combination of those things, we're seeing more and more of that. Where somebody might blow well below the legal limit of 0.08 when it comes to alcohol, they might blow a 0.04, 0.03, but they have other substances in their system which is affecting their ability to drive.
All ramifications are set by the state. The Omnibus DWI Act in Arkansas, which went into effect in 1983. It states that anything over the legal blood alcohol content level, 0.08, will result in a charge of driving while intoxicated. A first offense results in a minimum 1 day, but up to 365-day jail sentence. Usually the arrest serves as credit for that day served.
Your second one is a minimum of 10 days and a maximum of a year. The third is 90 to a year. But last year, there's been some changes in the law. Up until last year, if you had someone under the age of 16, you had a minimum of 10 days in jail. But with the help of David Whitaker, a state rep here, I wrote a law which if somebody is injured as a result of being involved in a DWI, in other words, you have a passenger and you had an accident and they somehow bloodied their nose, you're looking at a minimum of 30 days in jail and a maximum of a year. And if you're seriously injured, that now falls under the battery second and becomes a felony because we thought that DWIs where someone's actually hurt should be treated differently and be treated a little more seriously.
As Jones mentioned earlier, it isn't cheap, monetarily speaking. Court costs alone are $330. The average fine is $400, but it can be up to $1,000. Those guilty of a DWI will also spend money on alcohol classes that are required to get the license back. And car insurance goes up, more so if there was a refusal to blow. Many offenders plead guilty before ever stepping up against Jones and his team. But for the cases that do go to court, he relies heavily on the reports written by the Fayetteville police officers. When Corporal Sutley arrived at the prosecutor's office, he was friendly with the staff and appeared to know his way around. A good relationship with the prosecutor's office, he says, helps to more efficiently give them what they need. At the beginning of his 20 years as city prosecutor, Jones remembers an older cop telling him, "We'll catch him, you clean him." As a result, Jones has never had an officer question what is going on in his office. They understand that their jobs are important, and they understand the roles of government. To bypass the problem of a potential DWI, Jones says to either have a teetotaler for your date to holiday parties, or just have one drink.
The insidious thing about alcohol is not just your physical impairment, it impairs your judgment. And what happens is you know that you shouldn't drive on, but you have one drink and you know that. But the odd thing is 3, 4, 5 drinks and you start thinking, well, you know, I'm good to go. I'm not that impaired. And you might not seem to be that impaired. It's not driving while commode-hugging drunk. It's driving while intoxicated, and intoxication is 0.08. And so the best bet, if you're going to drink at all, just don't drive.
Casey Jones is Fayetteville City Prosecutor, and Corporal Curtis Sutley is a member of the Fayetteville Police Department. This is Ozarks at Large.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for December 8th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, from the features editor from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. I said it was Sunday morning, but Becca, it's really not for us right now, is it?
No, it's really Thursday afternoon, and we're still waiting on the full extent of the snow apocalypse.
Right, so we're not really sure what will transpire. Right, what did transpire over the weekend. So.
Exactly, but you know, my crystal ball can see one thing clearly. If you're looking for a show that's going to go on as scheduled, you can always look to your neighborhood theater because the show must go on.
And that is?
Rogers Little Theater, where Joey Farmer is not a bit worried about the cast showing up for Fully Committed. Because he's it.
That's right. If he can make it, the show can go on.
You might remember the show starring Justin Sharer at Walton Arts Center. It's a comedy about a day in the life of an out-of-work actor who works in the reservations department of a restaurant in New York. The phone's ringing off the hook, everybody from celebrities to demanding customers to socialites, and he's got a high-maitenance chef, a French maitre d', and a British hostess to deal with. So about 40 different characters.
And he's a cast of one.
The good news is he can get there. The bad news is it's exhausting. He's been in theater since third grade and studied drama at Drury University, been involved with Rogers Little Theater for about 6 years, and has been in Lombardi, 9 to 5 the Musical, and God of Carnage, and directed shows such as Love, Loss, and What I Wore. So he's fully committed to being fully committed for you.
Okay.
Make it worth his while.
And showtime is 2 o'clock today and again Thursday through Sunday of next weekend at Rogers Little Theater. Tickets start at $17 at 631-8988. I am sure you will find A Christmas Carol on stage presented by Theater Squared at the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville this afternoon at 2.
Right.
And again, tonight at 7:30, a little iffier depending on the weather. It's a new adaptation by Morgan Hicks, and it's a lot of fun.
I believe there are puppets.
There are things that you won't expect, and it sort of changes your perspective on A Christmas Carol.
Is this the first weekend?
This is the first weekend.
Yes.
Lucky them. Tickets start at $22. And this afternoon, you can also check to see if these events are going on as scheduled. A Christmas open house at Prairie Grove Battlefield State Park with some spinners and weavers and lace makers, and theoretically some military drills and other outdoor living history activities. That's through 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. The Holiday Art Sale, formerly the Block Street Art Sale, is scheduled for noon to 4 at the Lifestyles Blair Center on South Thompson in Springdale. I bet you they'll have that.
I bet they will, too.
And there's a holiday market from 1 to 4 at the Center for Art and Education in Van Buren. Don't know how things are going down there, but you can call and find out at 474-7767. And the Bella Vista Men's Chorus is presenting a show called We Need a Little Christmas Now.
Check to make sure it's happening.
Possibly retitled We Need a Little Less Christmas Now.
I know a lot of things were canceled in Bella Vista this weekend.
Yeah. You never know how bad it's going to get up there. But it's at Bella Vista Community Church, and you can check by calling 855-0277.
And again, remember, this conversation is actually taking place on Thursday. Anything we mentioned or didn't mention that you had planned for today, check before you go.
Because unlike weather forecasters, we cannot see into the future. Oh, wait, maybe they don't either.
Cheap shot. Cheap shot.
Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
KUAF is here for your community. And in this season of giving, we hope you can help out as well. KUAF's Giving Tree will benefit the Outback program from Fayetteville Public Schools during the holidays. The Outback program is looking for non-perishable food items and gently used donations of children's clothing, shoes, and coats. Simply bring your donation to KUAF at 9 South School in Fayetteville and place it under our tree. Thanks and happy holidays.
A Christmas confession. I have, for years now, been trying to construct the perfect Christmas music playlist. An ever-evolving beast, it currently has 195 songs on my iPhone and would last more than 13 hours before a single song is repeated. It includes choral arrangements and Louis Prima, Bruce Springsteen, The Ramones, Merle Haggard, and Nat King Cole. It does not include Barking Dogs or Grandma Getting Run Over by a Reindeer. My desire for a mixture of the sacred and the secular, of the established and the new, is what makes listening to most Christmas albums somewhat difficult. No offense to James Taylor, his voice is still one of the most pleasant sounds on the planet, but a dozen straight-ahead versions of familiar Christmas songs is, well, too much of a good thing for one sitting. Every few years, there's a compilation of different artists singing Christmas songs on one CD that avoids the usual traps, but very rare is the single artist Christmas CD that can sound fresh every year the tree is trimmed. But for 22 Christmas seasons, Brave Combo's It's Christmas Man has been delivering the goods.
Who's got a beard that's long and white?
Santa's got a beard that's long and white.
Who comes around on a special night?
Santa comes around on a special night.
Special night, beard that's white.
Recorded in 1991, It's Christmas Man has 15 songs that capture the then four-man band from Denton, Texas at their most inspired. The uninitiated can be forgiven for looking at the liner notes and assuming the record is too much holiday novelty. Feliz Navidad is a cumbia, or Little Drummer Boy is a Cuban-influenced rumba. But Brave Combo has always taken the songs they record and the musical forms they play with just the right amount of reverence, without becoming too scholarly about the whole matter. Oh, Christmas Tree, for example, is a musical collage that's reinterpreted as a samba. This is music intended for all the brightest things associated with the holiday season and for moving about. It's not surprising that the Brave Combo live shows that are formed around the holidays have become among their loyal fans' favorites.
Hanukkah, Hanukkah, the sweet celebration. Around the feast we gather in complete jubilation. Many are the reasons for good cheer. Now that the season of lights is here. Many are the reasons for good cheer. Now that the season of lights is here. Together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring.
The band says it worked out their arrangements for the record in the summer before hitting the studio, often working up a sweat on a Texas stage in July. That's probably why the songs work so well. If you can get a crowd to dance to Christmas music in San Antonio when it's 100 degrees, the music can stand on its own, with or without the holiday trimmings. There are four originals on the record as well, from a cha-cha called It's Christmas to a polka called Santa's Polka.
Oh, it was Christmas Eve. Me and my cousin Steve were pulling an all-nighter. Our parents were gone. We thought it would be swift to catch them with the gifts and prove that all their stories of Santa were wrong. We played my dad's LPs of polka melodies and danced around until we collapsed on the couch. Then up on the roof, I heard the sound of hooves, and downward through the chimney came the real living proof. It's Santa's polka.
There is time to breathe, too. A heartfelt Ave Maria is embraced by acoustic guitar, and a no-nonsense Please Come Home for Christmas is as poignant as that song's ever been. The crowning glory may be the end of the CD, a version of Jingle Bells that's a wisp of a version, clocking in at under a minute. And maybe that's the way Christmas CDs should be. Unexpected, delightful, and welcomed back year after year. Brave Combo's It's Christmas Man, recorded more than two decades ago, is still available online at the band's website, as well as other major online retailers.
Last year, in his search for good Christmas music, Kyle came across a new album called Holidays Rule. The compilation record features classic Christmas tunes sung by a wide range of artists, from The Shins to Calexico to Paul McCartney. When it comes to Christmas songs, I am typically a traditionalist. Give me an old school crooner like Nat King Cole singing Oh Holy Night, and I'm golden. Growing up, I remember balking at modern singers producing their takes on traditional songs on the radio. While they were talented, it just didn't sound like what I was used to hearing. I found the creation of new Christmas songs to be silly, though there were a few that became so prevalent that I had to reluctantly accept them as part of the Christmas songbook. I'm talking to you, Mariah Carey. All this to say, I was pleasantly surprised to find how much I enjoyed this album full of modern artists putting their own spins on traditional songs. On the opening track, the band Fun manages to infuse their unique sound into Sleigh Ride and maintain and perhaps even improve the fun the song typically evokes.
Just hear the sleigh bells jingling, ring ting tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you boo. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, let's go.
One of my favorites this time of year is Baby, It's Cold Outside. The rendition by Rufus Wainwright and Sharon Van Etten has a tempo that's a little slow for my taste, but their vocals are great. Another duo on the album is The Civil Wars, who sing I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. I was unfamiliar with this tune, but the group brings its usual haunting sound to this track, which is an interesting addition to the typically upbeat and joyful songs heard this time of year.
Heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
While I appreciate the simplicity that can be brought to Christmas songs, I do like the tunes that seem bigger than life because of a large choir growing more exultant with each verse, or just through the use of a large band. The latter is present on May Every Day Be Christmas, another song that's new to me. The track, which features Irma Thomas and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, is a fun listen and also an excellent song to dance to with someone when you need a break from decorating the Christmas tree. Trust me on this one.
May every day be Christmas, and every day be blessed. Let the end of every day be filled with happiness. And may the Lord be good to you.
I realize we've been discussing Christmas songs, but I'm about to cheat just a little bit here. In my defense, the title of this album is Holidays Rule, so it doesn't exclusively feature Christmas songs. The last track on the album, for example, is, perhaps appropriately, Auld Lang Syne by Andrew Bird. The track preceding it is What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? This is one of my favorite songs of the season in general, and the back and forth between the head and the heart vocalists is absolutely charming.
All but in case I stand one little chance. Here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Oh.
Whether or not you're a Christmas song traditionalist, one thing's for sure. As musicians continue to sing holiday tunes, there's bound to be the perfect soundtrack to fit everyone's own unique desired sound of the season. This is Ozarks at Large.
Oh come Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here, until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
Support for KUAF comes from Edible Ozark, Arkansas. This quarterly magazine focuses on food, farms, and culture in the Ozarks. Proceeds will benefit hunger relief efforts through Feed Fayetteville and Feed Communities. More information, including subscriptions, available at edibleozarkansas.com. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, presents its annual Christmas concert Saturday, December 14th at Walton Arts Center. SONA will perform a mix of holiday favorites along with guest appearances, including Walmart President and CEO Bill Simon, narrating a piece centered around the Nativity story. Tickets are available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Winslow. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks to my colleagues for helping us put together this show on a still very cold Sunday morning. If you don't have to travel today, I would suggest not doing it. Most roads in the area this morning still in bad shape. The concert, Hope After Hyon, by the way, on the University of Arkansas cancel, originally scheduled for this evening, has been postponed. A makeup date will be announced shortly. And the Sunday performance of Junie B. in Jingle Bells, Batman Smells, a production of Trike Theater for today, has also been canceled. If you have any question about something that you might be going to, it's a good idea to call ahead. Thanks so much for listening. Have a safe and warm Sunday.